Skyscraper. VOA 1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Dan Novak, and John Russell. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Ecuador's president has declared a state of emergency in the prison system after rioting killed 116 people earlier this week. The order was issued by President Guillermo Lasso. It will give the government powers that include deploying police and soldiers inside prisons. The action came after a deadly battle Tuesday night between gang members at the Litoral prison in the port city of Guayaquil. The riot killed 116 people and injured 80 more. Officials said at least 5 of the dead had been decapitated. The prison has experienced a series of bloody clashes in recent months. But the latest fighting was the deadliest act of violence ever reported in Ecuador's prison system. Officials blame the clashes on gangs linked to international drug organizations who are fighting for control. Lasso told reporters what had happened at the prison was bad and sad. He said he could not guarantee that officials had been able to regain control of the prison. I ask God to bless Ecuador that we can avoid more loss of human life, Lasso added. It is regrettable that the prisons are being turned into territories for power disputes by criminal gangs, Lasso said. He promised to act with absolute firmness to regain control of Litoral and to prevent the violence from spreading to other prisons. Images shared on social media showed many bodies inside the prison in battle-like settings. Officials said rioters had used guns, knives, and bombs during the fighting. Family members of the victims arrived at the prison to seek information about relatives and demand accountability from officials responsible for safety. The government increased the military presence outside the area. Lasso said the state would assist the families of dead and injured prisoners. Similar clashes took place in February and July of this year in different prisons throughout the country. At least 79 people died in the February violence, while 22 were killed in July. I'm Brian Lynn.
For over 50 years, the Hong Kong Journalists Association, or HKJA, has worked to protect media rights. But now, the organization says it is under intense pressure from city officials. Hong Kong's government, police, and one newspaper recently accused the HKJA of being biased toward pro-democracy newspapers. They also say the HKJA has recruited students as journalists and failed to admit that it blocked police during protests. Ronson Chan is the head of HKJA. He believes the criticism is part of an effort to force the association to close. I would say they are trying to add some pressure to us. Maybe they hope to see we may disband, as well as other community groups. We won't, Chan said. The HKJA has more than 500 members. It is run by working journalists in Hong Kong. The group's goals are to improve freedom for journalists and raise professional standards. But since Hong Kong's national security law was passed in 2020, the city's media freedom has come into question. In its July annual report, the association found that freedoms have seriously worsened in Hong Kong. The report mentioned media arrests and the closure of pro-democracy newspaper Apple Daily. There were also changes at public media station Radio Television Hong Kong, which led to the canceling of some shows and accusations of bias. Now, Chan says, the HKJA is in a thunderstorm of pressure itself. Chris Tang is Hong Kong's Secretary for Security. He spoke with reporters at Ta Kung Pao, a newspaper that supports the government in Beijing. He accused the HKJA of having biased views and favoring pro-democracy news organizations. Tang said the association's membership includes many student journalists. He accused HKJA of influencing young reporters and telling young people that everybody can be a journalist, even 13-year-olds. Tang was likely talking about a 13-year-old volunteering with a news organization who was arrested during anti-government protests in Hong Kong. HKJA's Chan told VOA that the accusations are not new. He called Tang's comments illogical. He denied that the arrested 13-year-old was a member of the association. He also said journalism students make up less than 60 of its members. Tang was not the only official to make claims against the group this month. Hong Kong's police chief, Raymond Siu Chak Yi, said at a police event that the HKJA is biased against the government. And in an interview with VOA, lawmaker Holden Chow said the HKJA aided protesters during 2019 anti-government rallies. There were so-called journalists on the spot assisting the illegal protests, blocking police operations, and some even harassed female police officers, Chow said. We wonder whether HKJA is still a professional group, Chow told VOA. Chan, who is an editor at the pro-democracy news site Stand News, said there is no evidence to support the accusations. Hong Kong is in 80th place in the Reporters Without Borders press freedom ranking. The group says the new national security law is especially dangerous for journalists. Freedom of the press is guaranteed under Hong Kong's basic law, but the recent national security law is able to overrule the city's local laws. The international group Human Rights Watch has said the national security law is badly harming Hong Kong's press freedoms. I'm Dan Novak.
North America is now in the fall season, a time of cooler temperatures, colorful leaves, and seasonal treats. Fall is a season we describe in terms of colors and feelings. Yellow or orange leaves fill many trees, and people feel happiness or calmness when they walk outdoors. In this week's Everyday Grammar, we will explore the connection between fall and grammar. You will learn about how to describe fall through noun phrases, adjectives, and determiners, markers of nouns. Let's start with a few important terms and ideas. Noun phrases are groups of words that act like a noun in a sentence. Noun phrases can appear as the subject of a sentence, or they can appear in the predicate, the part of the sentence that says something about the subject. Consider the following statement.
A cool wind suggested the arrival of fall.
The words "a cool wind" make up a noun phrase and act as the subject of the sentence. In the sentence's predicate, the words "the arrival of fall" are another example of a noun phrase. Let us consider each of the words in "a cool wind" individually. Wind is a noun. Cool is an adjective. The word "a" is a determiner. It identifies the beginning of the noun phrase and tells whether it is general or specific. Think of determiners as markers of nouns or noun phrases. They act like a sign to show that a noun is coming. These determiners mark the beginning of a noun phrase, much like the way changing leaves might mark the arrival of fall. Determiners include words such as the, a, an, this, those. Some grammar books say some kinds of pronouns, his, her, their, act as determiners as well. For example,
their new tree has such beautiful leaves.
When you can identify determiners, your ability to identify nouns and adjectives will improve, and you will be better able to understand sentences in which you do not know the meaning of all of the individual words. Imagine you are reading a book that describes the fall. You might read something like the following.
The blank leaves fell from the tree.
The sentence begins with the determiner, the. Then there is the noun leaves. But what about the missing word? You know that it is likely an adjective. It is a term that describes something about the noun. Ask yourself what kinds of adjectives usually describe leaves. Now let's add the word.
The radiant leaves fell from the tree.
You can probably tell that radiant means something close to bright or colorful. After all, the term is describing leaves, and leaves are generally described as bright or colorful. But the sentence could have been different, as in,
the amber leaves fell from the tree.
In this case, amber means a color that is between yellow and orange. But still, the adjective connects with the general idea of light and color. All the examples we have explored use a determiner to mark the beginning of a noun phrase. But English sentences do not always have such words. Consider the following statement.
Large pumpkins lined the road.
In this case, the subject is large pumpkins, a noun phrase that consists of an adjective, large, and a noun, pumpkins. Still, the general idea is that the adjective comes before the noun. The next time you read in English, pay careful attention to how the writers use determiners, adjectives, and noun phrases. Note when determiners are present and when they are not. With time, you will use adjectives, noun phrases, and determiners to create your own descriptions, perhaps of a happy fall day, perhaps of another time altogether. I'm John Russell.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember. The United States faced a deep national crisis in 1850. That crisis threatened to split the nation in two. It began over the issue of slavery in the new territories of California and New Mexico. Many Northerners wanted to ban slavery in the new territories, but Southern states believed the federal government did not have the right to decide where slavery could or could not go. President Zachary Taylor had no clear policy on the issue. He attempted to be neutral. He hoped the problem would solve itself, but he did not get his wish. In fact, the split between North and South grew wider. Many Southerners said the South should declare its independence from the rest of the country. Then, Senator Henry Clay of Kentucky stepped forward with a plan to save the Union. Clay had left the Senate in 1842, but returned in 1849. He was surprised to find how bitter the North and South had grown toward each other in his 7 years out of the Senate. Clay urged his friends in the border states, those between the northern and southern states, to work to build public support for the Union. He believed their support would help prevent the South from seceding. Clay also began to think about a compromise that might settle the differences between the two sections of the country. He once said, "I go for honorable compromise whenever it can be made. Life itself is but a compromise between death and life. The struggle continues through our whole existence until the great destroyer finally wins. All legislation, all government, all society is formed upon the principle of mutual concession, politeness, and courtesy. Upon these, everything is based." Clay was sure that a compromise between North and South was possible. Near the end of January in 1850, Clay completed work on his plan. Most parts of it already had been proposed as separate bills. Clay put them together in a way that both sides could accept. Clay proposed to the Senate that California join the Union as a slave-free state. He said, "Territorial governments should be formed in other parts of the Western territories, with no immediate decision on whether slavery would be permitted." Clay proposed the western border of Texas be changed to give New Mexico most of the land disputed by them. In exchange, he said, the national government should agree to pay the public debts that Texas had when it became a state. He proposed that no more slaves be sold in the District of Columbia for use outside the federal district. But he also said that slavery should not be ended in the district unless its citizens and those of Maryland approved. Clay said a better law was needed for the return of fugitive slaves to their owners. And he proposed that Congress declare it had no power to interfere with the slave trade between states. Senator Clay believed these 8 steps would satisfy the interests of both the North and the South. Senator Jefferson Davis of Mississippi declared that Clay's compromises did not offer anything of value to the South. He said the Southern states would accept nothing less than extending the Missouri Compromise line west to the Pacific Ocean. Extending the line meant that land to the south would be open to slavery. Clay answered that no power on earth could force him to vote to establish slavery where it did not exist. He said Americans had blamed Britain for forcing African slavery on the colonists. He said he would not have the future citizens of California and New Mexico blaming Henry Clay for slavery there. Clay said he did not want to debate, but wished that the senators would think carefully about his proposals. He said he hoped they would decide on them only after careful study. He asked them to see the proposals as a system of compromise, not as separate bills. Clay expected extremists on both sides to denounce the compromise, but he believed the more reasonable leaders of the North and South would accept it. 1 week after Clay first proposed the compromise, he rose in the Senate to speak in its defense. The Senate hall was crowded. People had come from as far away as Boston and New York to hear Clay speak. Some senators said there had not been such a crowd in the Capitol building since the day Clay said goodbye to the Senate 8 years earlier. Clay had to rest several times as he climbed the steps of the Capitol. He told a friend that he felt very tired and weak. His friend advised Clay to rest and make his speech later. "No," Clay said, "my country is in danger. If I can be the one to save it from that danger, then my health and life are not important." Senator Clay began his speech by talking of the serious crisis that faced the nation. He said that never before had he spoken to a group as troubled and worried as the one he spoke to now. Clay listed his 8 resolutions. Then he said, "No man on earth is more ready than I am to surrender anything which I have proposed and to accept in its place anything that is better. But I ask the honorable senators whether their duty will be done by simply limiting themselves to opposing any one or all of the resolutions I have offered. If my plan of peace and unity is not right, give us your plan. Let us see how all the questions that have arisen out of this unhappy subject of slavery can be better settled more fairly and justly than the plan I have offered. Present me with such a plan, and I will praise it with pleasure and accept it without the slightest feeling of regret. Clay said, the major differences separating the country could be settled by facing facts. He said, the first great fact was that laws were not necessary to keep slavery out of California and New Mexico. He said, the people of California already had approved an anti-slavery state constitution. And he said, the nature of land in New Mexico was such that slaves could not be used. Clay said there was justice in the borders he proposed for Texas. It would still be a very large state after losing the area it and New Mexico each claimed. And he said it was right for the United States to pay the debts of Texas because that state no longer could collect taxes on trade as an independent country. Clay said there was equal justice in his resolutions ending the slave trade in the District of Columbia and strengthening laws on the return of runaway slaves. He said the South, perhaps, would be helped more than the North by his proposals. But the North, he said, was richer and had more money and power. To the North, slavery was a matter of feeling. But to the South, Clay said, it was a hard social and economic fact. He said the North could look on in safety while the actions of some of its people were producing flames of bitterness throughout the southern states. Then Clay attacked the South's claim that it had the right to leave the Union. He said the Union of States was permanent, that the men who built the country did not do so only for themselves, but for all future Americans. Clay warned that if the South seceded, there would be war within 60 days. He said the slaves of the South would escape by the thousands to freedom in the North. Their owners would follow them and try to return them to slavery by force. These events, he said, would lead to war between the slaveholding and free states. He said this would not be a war of only 2 or 3 years. History had shown, he said, that such wars lasted many years and often destroyed both sides. Even if the South could secede without war, he said, it still would not get any of the things it demanded. Secession would not open the territories to slavery. It would not continue the slave trade in the District of Columbia. And it would not lead to the return of slaves who escaped to the North. So, said Clay, the South would not help itself by leaving the Union. His 2-day speech gave new hope to many that the Union could be saved. But extremists on both sides opposed his plan.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.